The big servant filled the doorway, his presence as solid and imposing as ever. If he felt guilty for following me in London and playing a part in the fire, he didn't show it. Langley sat in a chair at a small desk facing the centre of the room. A collection of blackened equipment filled a box nearby, and he was poring over half-burnt pieces of paper. Bollard must have gathered up anything that was salvageable from the laboratory and brought them to the new room. "Was much of your research destroyed?" I asked.
"Some."
He didn't sound nearly as annoyed as I thought he would be. I'd come prepared with a speech that put the blame for the fire back onto him. Considering he'd deliberately riled me, I thought it only fair he acknowledged his role. It seemed unnecessary now, and perhaps a little petty when he didn't seem too upset.
"How are you this morning, Hannah?"
"Well enough, considering I've just learned that I'm not who I thought I was."
"That's a dramatic way of putting it."
"You try going from being a narcoleptic to a fire starter in one evening. It would be like..." I searched for a metaphor and settled on the obvious. "Like suddenly discovering that you can walk again."
"Not necessarily a bad thing."
"Sorry." I chewed my lip, but he smiled. It was so unexpected and out of character that my jaw flopped open.
"Sit, Hannah. I suspect you have questions."
"Several, but I don't think you can answer them all. How did I get to be a fire starter? Was I born this way?"
"You're right. I can't answer them all."
"Can't or won't?" I sighed and flounced onto the chair, only to have to reposition myself on the edge of the seat when the bustle in the back of my dress got in the way.
"Would you like to speak to Lord Wade?"
he asked. I stared open-mouthed at him. "Me? Speak to Lord Wade?" I snorted. "The man hasn't said a word to me in all the time I've known him. Why would he deign to talk to me now?"
"I could arrange a meeting."
"In his house?" He shrugged one shoulder.
"Do you want to go back there?"
"I'd like to speak to Vi. I'd like to ask her..." I choked back a sob that had unexpectedly risen to my throat. "I'd like to ask her why she lied to me all this time."
"Perhaps she was told to."
I contemplated that for a moment. She had lied to me for years, even as a child. It must have been an order from the Earl. Vi was my friend. We'd cared for one another, laughed together, and cried together. She'd never have willingly lied. My feelings toward her tempered somewhat, although not entirely. The day of the kidnap came back to me. Her nervousness had been more pronounced than ever, and I'd had the very strong feeling that she was keeping something from me. At the time, I thought she wanted to stay away from the mysterious gardener, Jack. But now... now I wondered if she were pushing me toward him, albeit reluctantly. Miss Levine had also been on edge that day, and yet eager for us to go for a walk, despite the looming storm. She had also disappeared very quickly when it began to rain, and not followed us into the woods. The woods that Vi had wanted to enter, when usually she hated it. Had they known I was about to be kidnapped? Known and wanted it? I felt sick. I couldn't breathe. Vi, how could you?
Put your head between your knees, Hannah. Breathe.
Bollard's strong hand gently pressed the back of my neck, pushing me forward so that I folded up on myself. I breathed deeply until the nausea vanished and my head cleared. I felt ill all over again, not because Vi had colluded with Miss Levine to force me into a trap, but because it was Jack who'd orchestrated the trap. He must have, or how would they know to lead me into the woods? He'd enlisted Vi's help. He'd known she was involved all along, and he hadn't told me. It explained his hesitation last night, when I asked him how he knew to take me and not Vi. It wasn't because I was more confident than she, or that we had a connection. It was because he'd met her.
"What is it, Hannah?"
Langley asked.
"He lied to me," I muttered through my tears.
I don't know when I'd begun to cry, but I couldn't stop myself. Vi and Jack had lied to me. People I thought I could trust. People I thought cared about me. To make matters worse, I was a fire starter, and so much about that was still shrouded in mystery. I needed to talk to someone about it, but there was no one I could completely trust. I'd never felt more alone in my life.
"Jack lies about a great many things."
Langley signalled for Bollard to escort me to the door.
"I thought you already knew that. I'm not sure why this has come as a surprise."
"I think I hate you,"
I said through my tears and clenched jaw.
"It'll pass, as will your feelings for Jack, both good and bad."
He sighed and slouched over his papers. His voice, when he spoke again, sounded muffled, as if his mouth was buried in his collar.
"Perhaps it's better for you both if you learn now just how much he has lied. The two of you together is a dangerous combination to yourselves and to others."
He was right, yet I hated hearing it.
"Good day, Hannah."
I ran past Bollard, down the corridor and outside. I wasn't dressed for walking, but I didn't care, nor did it matter. There was no need for coat or gloves, although sturdier shoes would have been nice. The heels may have been small, but they weren't made for running, and the soft leather was ruined by the time I reached the old abbey. The weak morning sun hadn't quite burned away all the mist, and it hung over the lake like a cloud. The sky was a monotonous grey, stretching endlessly above, and there wasn't a breath of wind in the air. Everything was so still, peaceful. The only sound came from my sobs, echoing around the ruins. How many others had come to that place to cry? Had the Frackingham children before they were locked in the dungeon? I leaned against the stones for support and buried my head in my hands. A thousand things raced through my mind, but one screamed louder than the rest. What else had Jack lied about? At some point, I stopped crying, but I remained at the ruins. I couldn't face Sylvia and Langley yet, and something about the abbey called to me. It had been a proud and majestic building once, dwarfing the landscape and reaching for the clouds. Monks had lived and worked there for hundreds of years, going about their daily ritual with purpose and a strong sense of themselves and their place in the world's order. But now it was just a collection of stones that barely resembled its original structure. It was broken and almost overrun by the higher power of Mother Nature. Much like me, if the fire inside me was indeed a natural thing I'd been born with. I truly had no idea.
I wandered through the ruins. The stones were cool and slippery, but that didn't stop me climbing some of the more stable walls. I inspected hidden nooks and pulled back the grass in places to see the foundations. After a while, I knew the abbey's layout and could picture the monks as they shuffled off to mass or slept in their bare cells. It was a welcome activity and helped calm me, but my adventure was interrupted by the crunch of gravel on the long drive beneath Jack's horse's hooves. He didn't see me and rode straight up to the house. I thought about going after him, but decided against it. It didn't matter in the end. He came to me.
I thought I might find you here.
He stopped a few feet away and tapped his fingers thoughtfully on the flat top of a large stone.
You seem to like this place.
At least I can't burn it. It's already ruined. His Adam's apple bobbed erratically.
What happened is not your fault, Hannah. Don't blame yourself.
I don't. He nodded.
I've been to see August.
There must be a reason you're telling me that. Another nod. He took a few steps closer, but remained out of reach. He looked exhausted. His eyes were webbed with red lines and circled by dark shadows. Seeing him like that dissolved most of the lingering anger I felt toward him. But the sadness remained, a heavy weight pressing down on my chest.
He warned me that you were upset.
You lied to me, Jack. I'd say I have good reason to be upset. He leaned his hip against a low wall and regarded me.
You're right. I did lie. I wanted to protect you, but I suppose I should know by now that you don't need protecting. I'm sorry, Hannah.
Tell me what role Violet played in my kidnap.
I'm not entirely sure. I never spoke to her, only to your governess. She came to me in the grounds soon after my arrival and told me which girl to take. The short, freckly one, she said.
She came to you? I frowned. So she already knew your purpose? He nodded and crossed his arms.
I don't know how. It may have been August's doing, but she gave me a time and place, and true to her word, you were there.
But what of Vi? He shrugged.
I assumed the governess enlisted her help to get you into the woods that day. I saw her in the cottage, you know.
Before or after you kidnapped me?
After. I was about to carry you away when her face appeared at the window. She looked odd. Sad, perhaps, or conflicted. I don't think her involvement was a decision she came to lightly, if that helps.
I looked out for her every day of my life. I ensured Miss Levine never became cross with her, only with me. If she couldn't complete a task set by our tutors, I'd help her. If she was cold, I gave her my coat. Yet she abandoned me like I was nothing more to her than a doll she no longer wanted to play with. It doesn't matter how much she was involved. She just was. I walked off and headed for the lake. Jack came up beside me, and I swiped away my tears. He shortened his stride to walk in time with my steps, and didn't take his gaze off me. Not that I was looking at him, but I could feel him watching me.
I'm sorry I forced her to do it,
he said.
And I'm sorry I didn't tell you. I thought it was best you didn't know. Can you forgive me?
I can if you don't lie to me again. I wanted him to talk to me about his past, about being Jack Cutler before he became Jack Langley. But he didn't. Until such time that he did, we could never be true friends, trusting one another implicitly. It would seem I no longer had a single friend in the world. I turned my face to the lake, but didn't continue on. "Why would Vi betray me like that?" I asked, particularly if she were reluctant to do so.
"I can only guess."
"And what is your guess?"
"That she was given no choice, either by your governess or by Lord Wade himself."
"Lord Wade?" I chewed my lip. None of it made sense. Not Vi's involvement, not her father's, and certainly not Langley's. I was still sceptical about his motives, even though I was now sure Jack and Sylvia weren't party to them. How did Langley know where to find another fire starter?
He told me that Bollard had heard rumours in the village about a girl kept in an attic, in a manor house, who could set things on fire. He thinks the villagers must have heard of it on the grapevine from the Windermere servants. It's not far from here. I'm sure some of the Harborough residents have been to the village near Windermere. You don't believe that?
I'm not sure. What troubles me is that it has happened now. Why? He shrugged.
The rumours may have been around for years, but Bollard has only just overheard them.
Perhaps, but don't you think it's odd that it coincided with the theft of your uncle's papers?
You think the two are linked?
I don't know, but it is strange that your friend was commissioned to perform the burglary right after I moved in, and that nothing of monetary value was stolen, only some of your uncle's papers. What was in those papers? How did the man who hired Patrick know where to look, and what to look for? He gave Patrick some very specific instructions. Jack pressed his lips together and put his hands on his hips. After a moment of staring at the lake, he spun round.
You're right. Too many questions.
He strode off back to the house. I picked up my skirts and ran to catch up with him. Are you going to confront Langley?
Yes.
Then I'm coming with you. Chapter 12. There you both are, Sylvia said as Jack and I entered the house via the courtyard. I've been looking for you. Were you in those horrible old ruins again? I thought you liked the ruins, I said. You've certainly painted them often enough. Only because there is little else to paint hereabouts. It's depressingly cold and damp in winter. I suppose that's why you like it.
It does have a certain appeal,
Jack said absently. He seemed eager to get away, but I could see that she needed to talk about something. Is everything all right? I asked. Yes. No. That is, I wanted to apologize to you, Hannah. Me? Why? Because when it was revealed that you weren't Lady Violet, my reaction may have made it seem as if I were...
Disgusted?
Jack offered, crossing his arms and lifting one eyebrow. I was shocked, she said. Why are you smirking at me like that, Jack? This is between Hannah and me.
Anything that concerns Hannah also concerns me.
He leaned down so that he was nose to nose with her.
And I just wanted to see how you'd get out of this with your polite facade intact. I seem to recall you having a similar reaction when August took me in. You never apologized to me for being shocked.
Then you recall incorrectly. She sniffed. When he smiled, she shoved his shoulder. Go away! Haven't you got better things to do than torment me?
As a matter of fact, we do.
We're going to speak to your uncle and get some answers. I grasped her hand and gave it a squeeze. I wanted her to know I appreciated her seeking me out to apologize. It meant more than she would ever know. Would you like to come? Not particularly, she said, but when Jack and I walked off, she followed. Jack went to barge past Bollard as he opened his uncle's door. The servant put out his arm to stop him, but Jack simply squared up to him, smiled, and politely said,
Move, or I'll set your shirt on fire. Let them in,
Langley said with a frustrated sigh.
What is it, Jack? I thought we already discussed the rebuilding arrangements.
Is that where you went this morning? Sylvia asked. Jack nodded.
I've contracted a builder from the village. He's going to work off the original plans for Frackingham and replicate the destroyed section.
She pulled a face. Perhaps he could make it a little less gothic. Arches and gloom are out of fashion.
That's not why we're here,
Jack said to Langley.
We need to talk about what Patrick said.
Langley must have had a spare wheelchair stored somewhere, because he sat in another, smaller one, the first no doubt having been reduced to ashes. He had wheeled around to face us when we entered, but now he turned away.
It's none of your business. It bloody well is.
Jack grasped the handles of the chair and pulled it around so his uncle faced him. Langley's nostrils flared, but his gaze didn't flicker as he glared back at his nephew.
Who is the one-armed man?
Jack ground out.
Who hired Patrick to burgle you? It's all in hand. Tell us!
Langley folded his hands in his lap.
I appreciate your concern for me. I don't want to pursue this for you.
Jack straightened and closed his fists at his sides, but not before I saw the glow of his fingers. He was furious, but controlling it. Barely.
I want to get to the bottom of this for Hannah's sake. The theft may have something to do with her abduction. What makes you think that? The timing is too coincidental for the events not to be linked. Since you orchestrated her kidnap, and I suspect you know who the one-armed gentleman is, you must know why there's a connection.
Jack,
Langley said on another sigh. The wrinkles around his eyes folded in on each other, and his shoulders slumped forward.
The man is dangerous and shouldn't be trifled with. I contacted the constabulary after I realized who it was from Bollard's account. Let the detective inspector do his job.
The inspector is incompetent. He didn't question all of the staff after the burglary.
He has the man's name. All he needs to do is arrest him.
He lifted a hand and waved Jack away.
Leave me. I have work to do.
Jack muttered something under his breath, then stormed out. Sylvia, chewing her lip, followed him. I remained behind, despite Bollard looming beside me. For an intelligent man, that was a very stupid thing to do, I said.
You're still here,
Langley said, without turning around from his work. Jack is far more capable than the constabulary. If you want this man punished, you should give Jack some information.
Are you quite finished?
Now you've riled him, which is something you seem to like doing to the people who live with you.
Hannah,
he said, finally looking at me over his shoulder.
Jack has a job to do here, training you. He can't go gallivanting around the country.
Then perhaps he needs a new job. Jack and I trained in the bare room for the rest of the day, and the next. He was edgy and frustrated, and it was difficult for us both to concentrate. I made painfully little progress in learning to willfully produce the fire within me, and therefore absolutely none in dampening it. It wasn't surprising, since it required me to be angry, something I couldn't simply turn on at will. The eventual aim, Jack said, was that I would be able to set things alight with a mere thought, and quell the heat at times when my temper got the better of me. On the morning of what would have been the third straight day of training, Tommy gave us some startling news over breakfast. Or, I should say, he gave Jack the news. The two of them exchanged whispers in the corner before Tommy took up his position near the sideboard.
"Bloody hell,"
Jack muttered, thumping the solid surface of the sideboard with his fist. "What is it?" I asked.
"There was another break-in last night. Tommy scared the man away. He and Olsen kept watch for the rest of the night. You should have woken me,"
he said to the footman. "Yes, sir."
"Stop with the sirs when it's just us, will you? You know I hate it."
Tommy's usual dour expression lifted. "Yes, sir." Jack gave him a withering glare, and Sylvia covered her giggles with her hand. "Was anything taken?" I asked.
"No."
"Was it Patrick?"
"No, Miss Smith," Tommy said. "It wasn't anyone I recognised."
"Dear Lord," Sylvia said, sitting heavily on a chair. "What if he intended to murder us in our beds?"
"I'm sure that wasn't his intention, Syl,"
Jack said. Tommy puffed out his chest.
"I'll protect you, Miss Langley."
"Thank you," she said. "I can rely on you, if not my own cousin." "Have the police been notified?" I asked.
"Yes, Miss Smith," said Tommy.
Indeed, the inspector and constable appeared just before luncheon. It was the same ones who had come the first time, and I was surprised to see them. Weren't they supposed to be arresting the one-armed man? I was dying to find out more, although I doubted Langley would tell me anything. Jack and I watched the policeman leave from the window, our lesson having been abandoned early, because neither of us could concentrate or stop speculating about the intruder. "I hope they spoke to everyone this time," I said as the policeman climbed into their carriage.
"I'm more interested in what they said to August about the one-armed man, and what he said to them. Come on, let's find out."
We went straight to Langley's room, where we found him reading in bed. Neither Bollard nor the wheelchair were in sight. The room was much smaller than the previous one in the burnt-out eastern wing, and there was little space for anything other than the bed, a writing desk, a wardrobe, and a few chairs. Langley had filled up much of the remaining floor space since our last visit. Singed papers piled up near the desk, and broken or burned pieces of equipment filled boxes and crates. Microscopes, tools, and jars that had escaped the fire covered the relatively small surface of his desk.
"I suppose you wish to resume your questioning,"
Langley said, without looking up from his book.
"You suppose correctly,"
Jack said.
"We saw the police leave. What did the inspector have to say? Have they arrested the one-armed man?"
Langley closed the book and set it down on the bedside table.
They couldn't arrest him.
Jack went very still.
Why not? He claimed not to know anyone named Patrick in London. He said the thief must have lied to you to protect himself. He said he has no interest in my papers.
And they believed him.
You have no idea how convincing he can be.
Do you believe him? I asked.
No, but look at it from the inspector's perspective. He cannot arrest a gentleman based on the word of a criminal, not without other evidence.
What a farce, Jack muttered.
What are we to do? I asked. He cannot be allowed to get away with it. Jack nodded.
Patrick's life is in danger, and by extension, the lives of the charges he cares for.
Charges?
He takes care of orphans, using money I send him.
My money,
Langley said. Were the children linked to Jack's past? I suspected they were, but I wanted him to tell me of his own accord, not because I peppered him with questions, but because he wanted to.
Let me confront the one-armed man, Jack said.
No,
Langley said.
What good will that do?
If I can get him to admit it, I'll be another witness.
And when it's discovered that you know Patrick, no jury would convict him.
What if he admits it in front of witnesses?
Jack said.
Or the police.
Langley picked up his book and flicked it open to a page near the middle. I could have sworn when he first set it down he was at the beginning.
You're not going,
he said. Jack stepped up to the bed, but there was nothing threatening about his stance. He did ooze a kind of self-assuredness and power, however.
I'm 22, August. I have able legs and a voice. Let me use them.
Langley stared down at the book in his lap. The knuckles holding it were white, the thumbs digging into the pages.
I can find out who this man is without you telling me,
Jack went on.
There can't be too many gentlemen matching the description Patrick gave, so why not just make it easier and tell me?
Langley closed his eyes.
With or without your help, August? You have a choice.
Langley's eyes opened. I was surprised to see worry in their depths.
It doesn't sound like it.
When Jack didn't answer, he added,
I could hire someone privately. I've done it before.
To do what?
To find people.
Did he mean me? Jack.
I see.
Jack stood again.
I had no idea. I thought Bollard was your only lackey.
I can't always spare Bollard. I am a businessman, Jack, and businessmen hire people from time to time.
And here I thought you were a mad scientist, I said. Langley's lips stretched into a strained smile.
Very amusing.
I'm involved whether you like it or not, Jack said. If you wanted to hire someone to confront this man, then I suspect you would have done it, instead of sending those incompetent policemen.
I'd hoped to solve this in a legal manner.
We still can. I want to confront him.
He's dangerous.
Jack seemed to notice what he'd said at the same time I did. Or rather, what he didn't say. He didn't say no.
Give me a name, August. Trust me for once.
I do trust you,
Then prove it.
Someone cleared his throat behind us, and we all turned. Bollard stood in the open doorway, his unreadable gaze on his master. The small sound was so peculiar coming from the usually silent servant that I gasped.
"Very well, Jack," Langley said. "I'll tell you everything you need to know about Reuben Tate. You'd better sit down, both of you."
I sat in the armchair near the window, and Jack pulled a separate hardback chair closer to the bed. Bollard shut the door and came to stand beside the bed like an obedient dog.
"Reuben Tate and I were partners,"
Langley said. "Partners in what?" I asked.
"Don't interrupt. We owned a laboratory together and shared research. It seemed the sensible, economical thing to do, since we were both in need of funds, and our research interests were the same. It was our joint efforts that led to the development of a drug."
"A drug to cure what?"
"That is not your concern, Hannah. Reuben and I had a falling out over it. I wanted to sell the remedy to a large company with the facilities to manufacture it on a grand scale. But Reuben wanted to borrow money to expand our laboratory and produce it there. I won."
"I'm sure you did," I muttered.
"We both benefited financially from the sale. I bought this house and investments, then sold off my portion of the laboratory to Tate. We parted ways after that, and haven't seen each other since."
"So why is he stealing your papers?" Jack asked.
"I can only guess that he's in financial straits again, and needs a new cure to sell."
He waved his hand, as if his one-time friend's difficulties were no longer of concern to him. "He stole your research?" I asked.
"Some of it. I had Bollard bury the important formulas that weren't taken during the first burglary."
"So that's what he was doing in the woods the day I tried to escape."
"Reuben always did have a gambling problem," Langley said. "I suspect his debts have piled up again."
"But didn't you sell the other drug for a fortune?" I asked. "If your half bought this house, he must have gotten a sizable amount too."
"I received more than half, since I'd invested most of the funds in the first place. We had an agreement drawn up to reflect the proportions early on."
He thrust out his chin.
"It was another thing Reuben resented."
"Did he resent anything more?"
"The fact that I'm a better microbiologist than he is."
"And you think that's why he's thieving now? Money difficulties?"
Jack asked.
"Perhaps. Whatever his reasons, I doubt it has anything to do with Hannah's escape from Windermere."
He was calling it an escape now, was he? It still felt like an abduction to me. But I let the comment pass.
"It's purely a coincidence,"
Langley said.
"It must be."
When neither Jack nor I spoke, he added,
"Knowing Reuben, his debts have become unmanageable, and he is desperate for money. Selling a new drug, my drug, will alleviate the pressure."
"If you haven't seen him for some years," Jack said, "how would he know you were working on a remedy?"
"Because he knows me very well, and I'm always working on something."
Langley dictated the address of Reuben Tate's laboratory to Bollard, who wrote it down and gave the piece of paper to Jack. Hackney Wick, I said, reading it. Is that far from here? I confess, I've not heard of it. Langley grunted.
I'm sure there are many places you've never heard of, Hannah. It's not your fault.
I may not have been to many places, Mr. Langley, but I can assure you I was given access to maps and books. I know where most villages in England are. Indeed, I had often spread out maps on the floor of our parlour and studied every detail. I'd imagine what each village looked like, what the people did there. When he could, my geography tutor provided books about the places that described the landscape and history of a particular area, and I would study them as if I were leading an expedition. It was silly now that I think about it, but I would imagine myself as an explorer finding undiscovered lands. Every piece of England was like a foreign country to me, having seen nothing further than the Windermere estate boundary. But in truth, there probably wasn't much of the exotic about Derbyshire or Hampshire, Cornwall or Yorkshire.
Hackney Wick isn't a village, Jack said. It's part of London, albeit on the edge.
He pocketed the paper.
I'll head off today.
So soon, I said. But you won't get there before nightfall.
I'll spend a night in an inn along the way. Don't worry, I can take care of myself.
He was looking at me when he started the sentence, but by the end he turned to Langley. Langley picked up his book and began to read.
I'll see you in a few days.
Jack left in the carriage, with Olson driving. I found it difficult to settle to any task, but considering most of the tasks available to me involved needlework, it wasn't surprising. When I couldn't focus on a sensation novel that I'd borrowed from Sylvia, I decided it was time to get out of the house. I suggested a walk, but she had other ideas. We could go into the village, she said. Mrs. Moore said the smoky smell won't come out of some of our clothes. I'm sure Uncle will give us money for new garments. He's probably in need of some himself. Most of his personal belongings would have been destroyed. Bollard has already been into the village on his behalf. He's very devoted to your uncle. Very. Do you know how long they've known each other? A very long time. She pulled a face. Let's not talk about Bollard. He's so dreary. She put her embroidery back in her sewing basket and grasped my hand. Let's go this minute. But Jack has the carriage and Olson. Tommy will drive us in the brougham. It's smaller than the Clarence, but it'll suffice for the short journey. We sent Tommy to give word to Langley that we were going shopping in Harborough, then asked him to prepare the brougham, Langley's second carriage. 15 minutes later, we were about to climb into the cabin when a rickety farmer's cart, pulled by an old nag, lumbered up the drive. "Who could that be?" Sylvia asked, squinting into the sunlight. Tommy greeted the farmer and patted the horse's nose as two young lads hopped off the back of the cart.
"Bloody hell!" Tommy said. "What are you doing here?"
One of the lads dropped a coin into the farmer's palm. The farmer nodded at Sylvia and me, then turned his nag around and plodded off the way he'd come. The two newcomers looked up at Frackingham, holding their caps to their heads as they leaned backward to take it all in. They were a grimy couple. Dirt seemed to have set up residence in the creases of their hands and faces, and their filthy clothes were covered in patches. The taller lad's toes stuck out of the end of his boots, and his sleeves reached halfway up his arms. The shorter boy sniffed incessantly,
I recognized him as the one who'd peered out of the window of the house where Jack had met Patrick in London. Whatever was he doing here? Where was Patrick? Oh, no. Dear Lord, no. Horror twisted my gut, and I was glad when Sylvia hooked her arm through mine. I clasped her tightly and shushed her with a raise of my finger when she began to speak. Tommy bent down to the sniffly lad's level.
"What happened?"
he asked.
"He's dead," said the boy,
his bottom lip wobbling. My stomach dove. I gripped Sylvia tighter, and she sidled closer. Tommy swore, a sure sign that he was deeply affected. He took his footman duties very seriously, and swearing in the presence of Sylvia and me was a serious offence, in his own mind, if not in mine.
"Paddy knew something was going to happen to him,"
the lad said.
"That night Jack came, Paddy told us to come to Freakhouse if the worst happened. He told us how to get here and gave us money for the journey. He said you'd take care of us, Tommy, you and Jack."
"Of course we will," Tommy said. "You'll be safe here. But what about the others?"
"They're still in Plum Alley."
"Who's taking care of them?"
"Huh?
Is there someone in charge now that Patrick is gone?"
"No,"
the taller lad said.
"We got no one else." "What about Miss Charity? No one's seen her for months."
Tommy shook his head.
"Do the children have enough food for a few days?"
Silence as the two boys looked down at their boots.
"Why not? Jack sent money to Patrick regularly. He was supposed to use it to care for you all."
"He did," said Sniffles.
"He didn't," the other boy protested. "He bought the worst food, the stuff that's gone rotted. Sometimes it stank like old feet, or it had something crawling in it."
Tommy clicked his tongue.
"And I can see from your clothing that he didn't buy you anything new or warm like Jack instructed." "Paddy bought himself good clobber," the second lad said. "For his woman, too."
Tommy swore, then apologised to Sylvia and me.
"How did Patrick die?"
I asked the boys. Sniffles wiped his nose with his sleeve.
"We woke up 2 days ago, and he was lying on the ground. Blood everywhere."
"Smashed his head in, they did," the other lad said. "Right mess it were."
He spoke with more detachment than Sniffles, as if he took such violence for granted.
"Oh, my,"
Sylvia whispered, turning her face away.
"Right then, lads,"
Tommy said, standing.
"You'll be taken care of here, and we'll see to the welfare of the others. Come with me, and we'll speak to Mrs. Moore. She'll find you somewhere to sleep, and maybe some clean clothes. You can stay until Jack gets back, but not forever."
He glared at the house as he said it, as if he knew it was futile to ask Langley.
"Should we go to the others in London?"
Sylvia asked me as Tommy walked off with the boys.
"Something must be done to help them, or they'll end up thieving. Jack and Tommy would be terribly upset if one of them were caught. They'd be jailed for certain."
I nodded absently. I was concerned for the children, but there was something more pressing to consider. "Patrick must have been murdered by Reuben Tate," I said, "and Jack has gone to see him." Sylvia gasped.
"You truly think Tate did it?"
"I think it likely. Patrick was afraid to tell Jack who paid him to steal the papers. He said his life would be in danger if he did. I don't think Jack quite believed him."
"Then Jack doesn't know how dangerous Tate is. Oh, dear Lord."
"We have to warn him, Sylvia. We have to leave today. Right now."
Chapter 13.
Do you think your uncle will allow us to go? I asked Sylvia.
We'd remained near the carriage, trying to decide whether to obtain Langley's permission to follow Jack or not. It boiled down to this single question, and her answer. She pulled up the collar of her coat and sunk her chin into the fur.
No.
That's settled, then. We'll go anyway.
Hannah, that's terribly rebellious of you.
Rebellion would be leaving and not returning. I clasped her arm. We can't let Jack stroll into a meeting with Tate without being completely aware of the danger.
He has his fire to protect him.
What if Tate has a gun, or drugs him?
Yes, of course you're right.
If we hurry, we'll catch him on the road, or at least arrive soon after.
Uncle could send somebody else, she said. Tommy, or Bollard.
We'll take Tommy anyway. She still hesitated, so I added, I've been kept in an attic most of my life, only doing what I've been told to do by others, going where I'm told to go. If coming here has taught me anything, it's that I'm a free person now. I make my own decisions.
I don't know, she hedged. Uncle will be very angry, and I'm dependent on him. We both are.
He won't throw us out, not when he went to so much trouble to get me.
Precisely. To get you, not me.
Tears filled her eyes, and she blinked rapidly.
I am nobody.
You're his niece. I didn't feel quite as certain as I sounded. In many ways, she was as much a prisoner at Frackingham as I had been at Windermere. Most women were, in one way or another. We weren't allowed to own property or to open bank accounts, and many professions and educational institutions were closed to us. Now that I had left the only home I'd ever known, I was beginning to realise how much my welfare was in the hands of others.
You're braver than I, she said.
It doesn't feel like it. My heart is trying to break through my ribs. I'm determined to ignore it. For Jack. And for me. I needed to do this to assure myself I wasn't Langley's prisoner, that I could get away if I wanted to. I wouldn't allow myself to be locked up again. I'll get Tommy, I said, before she could protest again. When Tommy and I returned to the carriage, we found Sylvia waiting. She didn't look any less concerned, but at least she was still there.
Let's go immediately.
She extended her hand for Tommy to help her up the step.
We have coats and money. Uncle will still think we're going shopping in Harborough, but we'll go on to Hackney Wick instead.
Excellent. I smiled at her. You're turning out to be quite the rebel yourself, Sylvia.
I want to go shopping in London after this is all over. Since we are not taking a change of clothes, we'll have to visit Oxford Street again.
At least she'd agreed to come. We didn't find Jack on the road. He must have travelled faster than us, which wasn't surprising, since he had the better carriage and horses to pull it. We stayed overnight at an inn on the way, and reached Hackney Wick late in the morning. The suburb was indeed at the edge of the great city, and we came upon it suddenly. The open spaces of the countryside gave way to featureless, interchangeable terraced houses and brick factories that spewed smoke from dozens of chimneys. Their high walls blocked passers-by from seeing the machinations behind. Not that there were many passers-by. I could count the number who walked the muddy street on one hand. Who could blame people for staying indoors? The air stank, and the machinery beyond the walls whirred and clanged in an endless drone. We kept the window closed.
The carriage slowed in front of a double-story building squashed between two large factories, like a small child smothered by fat adults. It was built of brown brick, like everything else on the street, but it was a house, not a factory. The brickwork above the two topmost windows was blackened up to the roof line.
"Do you think this is it?" Sylvia asked. "Do you think he lives there, too?"
Langley didn't say. "I do know it houses Tate's laboratory and factory. I can see the chimney stacks of the factory behind."
"There's no smoke?"
Indeed there wasn't. The factory mustn't have been in operation. That would align with Langley's theory that Tate needed money quickly, and by nefarious means. If his factory wasn't operational, he likely had no income. Tommy opened the door for us, and we stepped down to the unpaved road.
"I'll lead the way," he said.
"Don't be absurd," Sylvia scolded. "You're a footman. You may escort us inside, but remain a little behind. I don't particularly want to meet this man on our own."
I didn't think Tommy's presence would make any difference to Tate. As Sylvia so bluntly put it, Tommy was a footman, and few gentlemen paid attention to servants. To people of Langley, Wade, and Tate's ilk, footmen were as featureless and interchangeable as the Hackney Wick houses.
"Do you think Jack is here?"
Tommy asked, looking up and down the street.
"I don't see Olson or the carriage anywhere."
"He may have sent him away," Sylvia said.
"Why would he do that?"
Why indeed? The unease that had been lurking beneath the surface since leaving Frackingham made itself known in the most intense way. Fear drilled into my core. One man was dead. Please God, don't let Jack be next.
"I don't think you should come with us," I said to Tommy.
"What?" Sylvia cried.
"Why not?"
"Tate doesn't know that we know about Patrick. Bringing Tommy may alert him to the fact he's here for our protection. Besides, while we're distracting Tate, Tommy can get into the factory and look around."
"That's very devious," she said.
I wasn't sure if it was a compliment or not.
"What about the brougham?" Tommy asked.
"We passed some stables around the corner, near the fire engine station. Take it there and walk back. If Tate is watching us, then he'll think you've left. There must be another entrance into the factory that doesn't go through the front house. See if you can find it." Tommy grinned.
"It's a good plan, Miss Smith."
"And dangerous," Sylvia said.
"Thank you for your concern for my safety, Miss Langley. I'll be all right."
She sniffed.
"I meant it would be dangerous for us alone."
"Oh, right."
Tommy tipped his cap, then hopped up to the driver's seat.
"I'll meet you back at the stables."
He flicked the reins and drove off.
"I don't like this,"
Sylvia said, watching him go.
"I don't like this at all."
"You have to stop worrying. It's written all over your face."